Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to The Mini Break, your daily podcast for the biggest storylines, results, and controversies from the tennis world. Today is February 24th. Another Champ Sunday in the books. Three ATP finals wrapped up, an ATP Challenger final I want to briefly talk about as well. Joining me to break down those matches, you of course know him as one of the co-hosts of this Mini Break podcast, a former Dennis and men's tennis superstar, which is ringing on my mind most dearly as his Division III ITA men's champion indoor championships wrapped up this weekend. Of course, we affectionately refer to him here as James Foster McDonald. Jamie, welcome back to the Mini Break. How are you feeling after the indoor push?
Well, first of all, I feel like you lingered on the word former there, really just to rub it in, which, I mean, you're not wrong. But no, it definitely hurt a little bit this weekend getting to watch all the D3 action. It was a lot of fun. Obviously, that's close to my heart, as you mentioned. So watched a lot of that. A good weekend of tennis all across the board, though. I know I'm aware enough to know that not everyone in the tennis world was solely looking at that, and there was a lot of other good pro stuff as well. But just so you know, I'm well-versed all the way from D3 up to the pros. It's good fun.
No, we run deep here at Cracked Rackets. No topic over or escapes our view, and of course that's why we do these mini-break podcasts each and every day, because we know how overwhelming the tennis world can get for the standard fan. And of course, if you missed any of our weekend mini-breaks, it's because you're not a member of our Patreon. We know Tennis Week doesn't stop on a Friday, and neither does our podcast. So if you do want to listen to those Saturday, Sunday editions of the show, be sure to go check out our Patreon. You subscribe, not only will you get those, but you'll get video interviews we've done if you subscribe. It might be out of free mug range, but maybe you can negotiate with Dalton if you sign up now, get yourself a free mug as well. And of course, we appreciate so many of you who have already taken the time to go on and sign up for our Patreon. We also, of course, appreciate our friends at Diadem, who make these podcasts possible. Diadem on the forefront of all racket and string technology innovations going on right now in the game of tennis. Don't take our word for it. Take the word of the pros, Sekou Bangora, Carousel, and others. They're using it, and if it's good enough for the pros, I promise you it is good enough for you. Jamie, I know you yourself are in the market for some strings right now, and I believe Diadem's the way you're leaning?
That is correct. I'm simply trying to wait and pull the trigger, and which one do I really want? You know, I've had some arm trouble, so I'm looking into that. But my game, you know, relies on some heavy spin, so I'm also going to be looking there. A lot of different considerations, but yeah, I'm going to walk away with a reel of Diadem string, and no doubt I'm going to be happy.
No, I just can't wait to, A, change your introduction to call you a high school tennis head coach, B, to talk about how your team has made the switch to Diadem and how you're going to be forcing all the guys to use it, because you, of course, know it'll bring the best out of their games.
Smart. Genius, yeah. Actually.
Yeah, of course. So again, use our promo code right now, CR50. Get 50% of your Diadem order off, and you know, be ahead of the curve. You don't want to be the one caught behind. You want to get to Diadem before all of your friends are using it. This is a deep cut, but there was a time when athletic DNA was flying around everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
I think this is going to be a little bit better. You don't want to be the guy who, like, in 2020 now is wearing athletic DNA. You wanted to be that in 2010. Same deal. You don't want to be the guy in 2030 who says, hey, I just made the switch to Diadem, while everyone else is like, really? You didn't do it 10 years ago when you heard about the CR promo code? So be sure to go get that switch underway now. And of course, we do want to thank them and also our sponsors at AeroBar, who were responsible for getting us some more pro gear to give away to your friends. And before we get to the tennis action, and I promise we will break down the tennis action, but there's a lot of fun stuff going on here at Cracked Rackets, so we got to get the plugs out of the way first. We have free gear giveaway winners to announce. Let's start with Nicholas, no less. name. He wants to stay incognito. That's pretty cool, Nicholas. But you're one of our winners of the Steve Johnson shirts for the Nicholases out there. In case there are multiple of you, you're at that Twitter account, and I apologize for broadcasting it now. Instagram account, excuse me, at BCCHS718. So if that's the Nicholas that you are, congratulations, Nicholas. You did the job. Westhoff, be sure to give our winner some sort of free giveaway applause sound effect. That's the winner of the Steve Johnson. On the John Isner front, have to give a big congratulations to our friend David C. Torres. And or David Torres, I know the C because that's from his Instagram and Twitter accounts, at David C. Torres 2. Congratulations, guys, and thank you to both of you for leaving as many reviews, as many comments as you did on our podcast feeds. It means a lot to us. So seriously, thank you to anyone who participated. Hopefully we'll be able to do even more of this in the future moving forward. But Nicholas, David, Mazel Tov, as we say in my religion, to you guys, you win some free gear from the pros. And you know, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of good stuff from the pros this week. Feels like we were the winners of some free excellent tennis. I mean, and that's what we got to watch all weekend long. Not the best segue, I'm working on it, Jamie, but three championship matches to recap from this past Sunday at the ATP level. On yesterday's mini break podcast, we talked about Simona Halep taking the title over Elena Rybakina. Again, to listen to that, you're going to have to go unlock that Patreon, or you can go watch the video online on YouTube at Cracked Rackets right now. But we only have the ATP men's matches to start with, and let's start with the guy who brought home his second title of the 2020 season. That's a guy by the name of Christian Garin, who with his win today over, I believe it was Gianluca Majere, 7-6, 7-5, wins the fourth ATP title of his career. Jamie, you look at the company he now joins in the group. We qualify as next-gen guys born 1995 or later. Zverev's got 11, Medvedev 7, Kyrgios 6, Tsitsipas 5, and then Khachanov, Rublev, and Garin 4. We talked about this on a GSP that may not see the light of day, Jamie, but I mean, you talk about Christian Garin now, and I made a joke on social media on Twitter over the weekend of he's my fourth favorite right now entering the French Open. It gets more legitimate with every result like this he has.
Yeah, I mean, look, this guy knows how to play on clay, right? We've seen it not only in this year, but man, in 2020, has he looked good so far. It's been very impressive. I mean, in particular, that win over Chorich, I think he did a great job of battling when he needed to and getting across the finish line. I think the question has been for him, of course, he's so young, so it's ridiculous to talk about it as if, you know, oh, the question's always been, will it get off of clay? I think it absolutely will. It's just, this is clearly his foundation. This is where the bigger results for him are going to start. And then it's a turn, and it's a game of translating from there to the hard courts and potentially even grass as well.
I'm glad you used that term, and I don't say this enough to you, so hey, great shot. Seriously, foundation. That's the key. Mm-hmm. You want to know where, you know, 60% of Christian Garin's wins are going to come during any given season? They're going to come during the clay court part of the year. They're going to come on clay courts in February when he has the choice, go play indoors in Rotterdam, indoors in France, or go to South America and play the clay swing. Guess what? This is what he's going to be doing, and he's not the only guy who does that. So I've seen some shade thrown over the past couple of days, a lot of it Nick Kyrgios inspired, at guys like Garin or the Casper Ruuds, who they get called dirt, you know, they ride the dirt, they're playing on the dirt all the time, they're just grinders who are clay court grinders. I mean, for Christian Garin, look, the stats in his career thus far would suggest that yes, the majority of his success has come on clay. 37-17 on that surface, 13-23 on hard courts, 2-5 on grass. So without a doubt, it's, you know, the only surface that he has a winning record on. But he also has four ATP titles on it. This is the first at the 500 level, but the three at the 250 level. He also made another final on top of it last year. You talk about the wins he's gotten over this stretch. It's been really impressive for Garin, beating guys. You know, Chorich, sure, not the most confidence, but still, the fact that he's come back from down a set five separate occasions, he beats guys like Cuevas, like Schwartzman on the dirt. You know, this week he's going to go play again in another clay court event in Santiago, Chile, and you understand maybe why he would want to play an event on his native soil in Chile. But at the same time, I mean, this guy signed up for a clay court event, Jamie. He's either in the final or winning it, and last year he didn't play any of the Clay Court Masters event. So with this title, he's up to career high number 17. I asked you this again on the Now Lost in Time Great Shot podcast, but good take, bad take, hot take, given the fact that he really doesn't have any more points coming off the board through that Roland Garros. I mean, he does have some, but he's already made up for them, given the fact that he didn't play Indian Wells, Miami, or any of the three Clay Court Masters, and given the fact that, you know, he lost to Stan Wawrinka in the second round of last year's French Open. This year, he's guaranteed to, at the very least, be a seed, to not have to face another seeded player till the third round. Good take, bad take, or hot take, he really does have a shot at cracking that top 10 by the end of the French Open.
Oof. I won't go all the way to, it's, I mean, he's got a lot to do. He's got a lot of work and a lot of people to pass. And not only does just any people, but some of these guys, and I'm sure we'll talk about them later, if not on this pod, I'm sure on many throughout the week, who have looked really good. And so not only is he going to be performing well, we expect, on the clay, there's going to be all these other guys who are also going to be posting good results, whether they're on the clay or, you know, on the hard courts, wherever they may be. So top 10 seems like a reach to me. Seems a little hot for me at the moment.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, again, there's so many points, but, like, you know, the obvious ones. Federer loses an Indian Wells title. I don't remember if he won in Miami last year. Maybe he didn't win in Indian Wells and he did win in Miami. It was one of those two, but he's going to lose a lot of points from the Sunshine Duo. And he played, I think, a bunch of Masters events last year on the clay as well. He's not playing any clay this season. A guy like Berrettini, so many points to defend through the French Open. I mean, you can pick different, you know, bits and places here and there. For Garin, it's not only that this is his best surface moving forward, it's that he's got confidence on it already. And there's always a transition portion of the year from transitioning from the hard courts to the clay. He's not really going to have to worry about that. I mean, you know, sure, Indian Wells, Miami, if he loses first round, second round, you know, maybe gets one win at each event, that's not the best, but he doesn't have any points to defend there. That's what I keep coming back to. There's no, like, the chance for him to just accumulate big points on his best surface, this is where the moment you live for as a young pro. You're like, oh, everything is lined up beautifully for me scheduling wise. And I think that is the point we're at with Christian Garin, who, you know, over the past, I think it is 52 weeks, it's like Djokovic, Nadal, and that's it, who have better records than him on the clay. And that is the sort of company he's kept. He has been a top 10 player. Now, he's never advanced past the second round of a major. And of course, until you do that, that's a strike against him. But he looked really good throughout the weekend in this final. You know, 76% of his first serves go in. He made 63%. He won 65% of his second serve points as well. I would just describe him, because we haven't really talked about his tennis yet, Jamie. How would you describe his game? I would just say there's no weakness. He's one of those guys who just has such a high floor.
Oh, absolutely. And particularly on the clay, right? That's some sort of the foundation, once again, of some of these great clay courters, is they're just so solid, right? They can do so many things across the court. You know, at times it looks almost impossible to wear their strokes down, because they have that relentless ability, that shot tolerance to simply grind from the baseline. And then the ones who take it up a notch also have abilities to win points and end points on the clay, even though it's harder to do. And Christian Garin's one of those guys. I think he's done a great job of, you know, asserting his game thus far, while remaining rock solid on the defensive side. So, you know, he's looked very, very good. And once again, of course, we know this guy's good on clay, right? That's where his great results have come. Really, the question mark for him becomes, all right, can we replicate any of these off the clay? And that just, we've yet to see that. So that's really the question mark in 2020.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. It's a guy who you'd say, particularly on the dirt, because he moves so well and changes direction so well. There's a reason his game, you know, the former junior French Open champion, it's well suited for the dirt. And I mentioned this, or I may not have mentioned this yet, but all of his professional finals, but one, and that dates back to the Futures and Challenger circuit as well, they came on clay too. So this isn't surprising. We should say for Gianluca Maget, I don't know how to pronounce it, excuse me, but the qualifier from Italy, you know, fourth, I think, ATP tournament of his career. He makes the finals. He's into the top 100 with this result. I believe he's going to end up around number 80 by making the final here. Great performance for him. And you got to keep in mind, he had to come back today after winning a 3-set semifinal earlier in the day against Balazs, and then to come back, have to play two more matches to play another match. It doesn't matter who you're playing, but to have to play another match on clay in the same day that he was up 5-3 in that second set on Garin. speaks to how well he played this week. But for Christian Garin, who, as I mentioned, on a 9-match winning streak, 5 of those 9 wins came after trailing by a set. Here, he wins the last 4 games to win the title. Just seems fitting. I mean, it's crazy that he's going to play again next week, and would it shock me if he pulls out? Absolutely not. But just a rock-solid performance from him in Rio all week long.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, results like these are exactly why, and just confirm, you know, what we want to see from him on the clay. Look, he just continues to rise up the ranks. And, you know, the longer he's on the clay, you know, the higher the possibility is that he continues to ascend even further. I mean, that's why your take goes into the hot take instead of simply the bad take, is because from what we've seen from him on the clay, he's so dangerous. I mean, he can knock out these guys like a team. Granted, team, obviously, I mean, at least obvious to me. You know, sometimes you can kind of see the cracks starting to form. You know, team's a guy who we've seen on the clay, and I didn't think he's at his best. So maybe any draw that they share, perhaps Garin's got a better shot because you know, someone like team isn't, you know, completely at his best and gonna win it. But ultimately, Garin doing his job, getting the title, and, you know, people like that are dangerous. He's on the clay. He's going to be phenomenal, and I think he's going to rack up a ton of points from all the clay court tournaments he plays this swing.
Yeah, it's why, again, look for a rankings push. If he doesn't get inside the top 15, and that's a bold thing to say, but just points-wise where he's at, that'll
he's
be
close.
A disappointment.
He's
yeah,
close.
No, that'll just – because you have 3 Masters results on the dirt to play with, and it's like you can't find a, you know, a round of 16, maybe even 1 quarterfinal in that grouping. That sounds crazy to me for Christian Garin. It wouldn't shock me at all to see him make a bit of a push. So really good result for him in Rio. We all took notice of that.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s inspired style and cutting edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
What's crazy is we had a Tsitsipas FAA final today, and that's not the thing we're leading this show with. In fact, it's not even the thing I want to do in the B segment. I'm going to push that all the way back to our C block, because I think the next performance we have to talk about is certainly our best performance of the day. The only guy who can say, hey, I went out and won a semifinal and a final match to get the job done. And that's young American Riley Opelka, who starts off his day with a 3-set win over Milos Raonic. He wins that match 4-6, 7-6, 6-3. Comes back 2.5 hours later, has to play fellow top-notch management client, a guy he played in New York, at the New York Open, I think, a week ago. Yoshihide Nishioka, who had been sitting pretty, I suppose, in that morning session. Got to sleep in, maybe even enjoy a little bit of brunch action, which I know in Boca or in Del Rey, excuse me, great brunch scene in Del Rey. So hopefully he got a chance to go down there, get a little samosa action, a little bit of, you know, just a little. I don't drink in the morning. The truth is, I don't know a thing about brunch.
Mimosa.
I was just trying. Samosa is the Indian delicious, almost. I'm trying to think of how to describe it. It's almost like a wonton, but fried. I don't know how to do it. But the point is, not a brunch guy. Neither was Riley Opelka, apparently, as he was straight business today. 3-set win for him over Nishioka. 7-5, 6-7, 6-2. But, Jamie, I watched that match, and it was so fascinating to watch the contrast in style. Riley Opelka, I mean, he's going to try and hit through everyone at all times, regardless of his conditions. But, you know, trying to watch him hit through these windy conditions in Del Rey against Nishioka, who was working spins, angles, just doing everything he could to try and survive, to try and keep Opelka off rhythm. Opelka had break chances at multiple points in the back half of that second set. I thought he was in control of this match. And ultimately, I mean, the performance he put forward today, I'll save that good take, hot take. All right, I'll just get into it right now. Good take, bad take, hot take. Opelka not only will end his season inside the top 20, but I think he might end his year as the top-ranked American, Jamie, because I just continue to grow more and more impressed with the 7-footer. Good take, bad take, hot take.
Well, inside the top 20, I'm going to say it's a good take because I will read you verbatim one of my takes. Opelka will be in the top 20 this year. So clearly we were thinking along the same lines. I mean, obviously, I get a little weird when we start talking about takes in terms of like year-end rankings because we're so far away that, you know, who knows.
But he's 7 foot tall, one bad fall and his shin's
exactly,
gone.
Exactly. So, you know, a top 20 sort of goal seems just so attainable from what the level of tennis we've seen from him. And, you know, you talk about this match in particular, you mentioned, you know, he was in control. He's going to be in control of so many matches he's playing because of the dynamic he brings to the court. You know, he's always going to be that aggressor. Look at this match. He hits 27 aces, so effective on the serve. Of course, that's what we expect. But man, when he's putting in 70% of them and winning 87% of those first serves, I mean, what do you do?
Okay. I agree with you, but here is the concerning thing, and it's not just the one match. We saw it in both matches throughout the weekend against Nishioka for Opelka. And this is just to play quick devil's advocate because we're both on the train. Clearly, the groupthink is working strongly. And for the record, this is a train you guys can date back all to, you know, the 2018 next-gen rankings that Ben Rothenberg and I did as a GSP, where we both put Riley Opelka in that second tier just below the Opelkas, the Zverevs, or below the Opelkas, excuse me, below. That's how big a shadow Opelka casts. He's below himself. No, below the Zverevs, the Tsitsipases, and FAAs of the world, because you just don't see someone that tall with that serve who can move around the court like he does. I would argue towards the back half of that second set in particular, it was Opelka who was playing the role of grinder. It was Opelka who was just getting back that extra ball, trying to force Nishioka to play aggressive. And you really couldn't play aggressive in this wind. It neutralized everything. It was survivor out there. And credit to Yoshihide Nishioka, by the way, made 70% of his first serves, won 62% of those points, 72% of his second serve points. Somehow, despite those service numbers, managed to face 12 break points. He saved 8 of them. Now for Opelka, he faced 4 break points. He saved 3 of them. But Nishioka did everything he could. He also flipped the script on Riley whenever possible. As I mentioned, Opelka, 10 of 28 on those second serve points, 36% conversion rate there for Opelka in the first match of the day against Raonic. Same sort of success on the first serves, made 64% of them, won 86% of those points. And I think that's a testament to still him getting better, most importantly, as a first volleyer when he serves and volleys. There used to be a point where he would serve and volley just to serve and volley, right? Mm-hmm. And now he does seem to have a plan of action up there, even if it's still not the most natural. But I think his drop volleys, his sequence of volleys, his sequencing of multiple volleys has gotten a lot better. But, you know, that 15 of 32 on the second serve point, he still hangs way too many second serves for someone his size. And that's where you go, wow, like someone with his height, the serve is going to get better. And like everything else he does, it's just gotten to the point where, you know, before you're like, okay, maybe it's ATP top 100 stuff. No, the power he can put on his return, his baseline skills, they're borderline top 50 now. And that is freaking scary.
Yeah. I mean, look, he's looked very good. And I think this is one of those guys too, where, you know, the better he serves, the more he's freed up to play that confident game from the ground. And so, you know, the better he's serving, the more he improves that, particularly on the second serve, the more chances he's going to make for himself because he's going to be feeling looser. He's going to be more confident, right? So many of those games, most people are going to have a lot harder time holding than he is. And you can use that. I mean, that's sort of an advantage he's got in the mental game, because he steps up in the line. He says, yeah, most likely I'm going to ace you twice in this game. And here we are. Right. You know, most guys don't have that luxury of having such a huge serve that they can rely on so easily. Opelka has that, therefore, in the return games. And anytime he gets into those ground stroke rallies, he's freed up a little bit. And I think he's going to only get more dangerous the more that becomes the case. And he serves even better and better.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. And, you know, on the flip side of this one, for Yoshihide Nishioka with the final appearance this week, he cracks the top 50 for the first time in his young career. I think Nishioka looks exceptional. I think the fact, you know, it takes someone like a Riley Opelka to, you can really just blow him off the court with that first serve because of the huge height disparity between the two, and watching them shake hands, just watching all of the trophy presentations, all of the different things, that's must-see content. It's just amazing. There literally is a foot and a half of difference between the two players in the finals that's got to be near, if not at the record. I think there was like a Dudi Sela, Ivo Karlovic match,
yep,
or something from before.
That's exactly what came to my
chair
mind.
The chair being pulled out for the hug, but, you know, this has got to be right near that. And, you know, for Nishioka, that he's top 50, he's got a bunch of points coming off the book for him at Indian Wells as well, but that he's going to get into, you know, it should get into at the very least qualifying, but probably the main draw of Indian Wells and Miami, it bodes well for the young Japanese player who I know, you know, we both are huge fans of.
Oh, yeah, look, I mean, there's so many great things you can say about Nishioka and his game in particular, but I'm really excited for him, and I think just, you know, a preview as well, I think he's got a fun match coming up in Dubai. He's going to be playing Air Bear.
That's crazy.
You know,
no, his first match in that tournament is to get on board that plane and make it there in time and beat any, like, if he loses that match, that's a schedule loss.
Yeah, I mean, what is it, Tuesday? So it's, yeah, we're recording, what, Sunday night? So he's got the day of Monday.
Yeah, but it's like, tight. What, a 10-12 hour flight, so he gets there plus the 8 hour time difference, and it's already Monday night.
Yeah, it's tight. I'm not gonna lie to you, it's not great.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, how much would the appearance fee have to be for you to where you wouldn't pull out of the event?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, there, and I mean, he obviously wants to play it as well. But yeah, I mean, maybe that. Yeah, maybe it's worth it. I don't know. Just, I mean, it's tough. He's put in a tough situation. There's no way around that. I mean, it's difficult flying, you know, that much and going across, and you know, then you got to be expected to show up and have a good match and against a guy like Air Bear, who's looked solid thus far. And yeah, it's a tall order, but Nishioka's looked really good, and I'm excited.
All I'm saying is Riley Opelka did this right, where he says, "Hey, I'm going to Acapulco after. I'm going to enjoy a week at home in Del Rey. I'm going to get to play a tournament and stay at my own house for the same event. How rare is that for a tennis player? Yeah. And then I'm going to go party in Mexico and go celebrate. And it's like a three-hour flight. And that's just going to be delightful." So great scheduling from Riley Opelka. For Nishioka, bold move. I know you know you want to chase those 500 points, although I think Acapulco is a 500 as well. But it's bold, I suppose. But for both of them to even have to play this week, bold move.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. You know, hopefully that doesn't make the level of tennis drop for either of them. But yeah, you got to suspect that could definitely be a real issue, particularly for Nishioka.
No, if you're Riley Opelka, you played two matches today, I'd be like, someone go get me in and out, and I'm not playing. I'm not touching a racket today. Like, I'm putting my legs up. I'm icing.
Yeah,
and I'm
gassed.
Just watching whatever.
For sure.
Yeah, I'm listening to the Mini Break podcast because I'm a subscriber on Patreon. That's what I would do on my day off. I don't go to brunch. All I do is watch tennis and consume tennis content. Come on. That sounds ideal to me, Jamie. It doesn't sound ideal to you.
Oh, it does. That's why I do it. That's why I spent all day watching D3 indoors, man. We already talked about that. Although
that's
as well. So I won both. I did have the stream up on my phone as I was watching brunch. I'm not afraid to admit that. No,
that's just a G move, and shout out to the Mrs. McDonald. I know you guys aren't engaged yet, but of course I know you have a girlfriend for tolerating all of that nonsense.
Because I was about to say, Mrs. McDonald be my mother, and she was also at brunch. Yeah. So there you go.
Well, I was going to say, Debbie McDonald, I believe is her name.
Well done.
Subscriber on Patreon. So
indeed.
Of course, I'm
love
eternally
content
grateful
as well.
To Mrs. McDonald. Big fan of her on this podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
But here's this. You claim – here's a transition for you. You say I don't take you anywhere. I'm going to take you to France now, Jamie. I'm going to take you to Marseille, in fact, for our last breakdown. And we can do this one a little bit on the quicker note because I know this was the least eventful, in my opinion, of the finals. That, of course, was maybe on paper what should have been the most exciting matchup of the day. Stefano Tsitsipas taking on Felix Auger-Aliassime, two of the young up-and-coming, you know, former top juniors that we have all – been so excited about and continue to be so excited about moving into this next decade of ATP events. In this affair, it was all Tsitsipas. He ends up taking out FAA 6-3, 6-4 fairly routinely in a final. The big point now for FAA, yes, it's his second straight final, and I believe he's hovering now right about the top 20, maybe even number 18 range in the live rankings himself after these past 2 weeks of results. But you know, for Felix, it feels worth mentioning. Five finals now for him. He's 0-5 in them. I use that tone as a setup, although I think I know the answer you're going to go with. Are you at all concerned that he continues to not even come up short, but just seems to be unable thus far to find his best level in one of these finals matches?
Not really. I mean, look, he's 19. And yeah, he's going up against Tsitsipas, who, yes, Tsitsipas is only 21.
But defending champ.
Yeah, I mean, look, Tsitsipas has the experience edge over him big time. And I think that showed today, right? So, yeah, maybe Efehe didn't play his best, but Tsitsipas played a clean match, wins this one 3-4, served really well and was effective on that, gave himself opportunities. And, you know, I'm not surprised Tsitsipas win this. He comes into this the favorite over Efehe, and he gets the job done in straights.
Yeah, I think Tsitsipas, the biggest thing for him is just how well he served all week indoors after losing early. Or I think, did he lose to Pospisil last week? Who knocked him out for Tsitsipas? He did lose to Pospisil.
Well, in Rotterdam, you mean? Or where?
Yeah, in Rotterdam.
Yeah, in Rotterdam, he actually lost to Bedene.
Bedene, excuse me. So, yeah, that loss to Bedene, he beat Pospisil here. That's what I'm confusing. Pospisil knocked out Medvedev last week. But I think for Tsitsipas, the biggest thing to bounce back from that result against Bedene to come here, you know, just I thought all week he played better and better as the tournament progressed, really did a number on Mikhail Yimmer, who, you know, I think fondly of in that first round, 1-3. But more importantly, he just didn't drop a set here all weekend long, and it was these same sort of first serve numbers that we saw where he's making 73% of his first serves against Felix, winning 78% of those points, over 50% on the second serve as well. In this match, he was 8 of 15, 53%, saved 4 of the 5 break points he faced. More importantly, created 9 break chances for himself, converted 3 of them. He was just on top of FAA. He attacked as much as possible. He seems to have learned, hey, I can't let Felix dictate with the forehand. I can't let things be easy for him. And, you know, that sounds kind of obvious, but good luck imposing your will against someone with the forehand as big as Felix Auger-Aliassime. But I thought Tsitsipas just did a great job, maybe even taking, you know, 2-3 miles per hour off the first serve, but just most importantly, hitting his spots and setting himself up for the plus one ball. And as we all know, when Stefanos Tsitsipas is playing plus one tennis, getting to the net as often as he did in this match against Felix, more times than not, he's going to find himself in the winner's circle. And I thought that was the case today.
Oh, definitely. I mean, look, this performance to me is just a reminder of why Tsitsipas, how really he was able to rise to that top circle of the game, is because, man, when he's playing well and when he is imposing his game, he's just so dangerous, right? We've seen him beat the very top guys in the game, so it's no surprise here that he's able to come through, you know, over a guy with far less experience in Auger-Aliassime.
Yeah, and I think for me the biggest thing to note is, A, it's probably the first time in his career, at least ATP-wise, he's defended a title. And that feels relevant. You know, you go around, first you're the up-and-comer, and then you get a seed, and now you're defending champion. And he handled that defending champion as he seems to handle all the pressures right now. I think that's why he is so special, with ease. And so that's a really good result for him. Now, the last point I want to make about these ATP results, and then we can wrap this bad boy up. But you look at our three winners this week, Jamie. Christian Garin, he's age 23 right now, turns 24 this year. In Delaware, Riley Opelka, he's 22 years old, turns 23 this year. In Marseille, Tsitsipas, he's still 21 years old, turns 22 later this year. You talk about the 9 winners we've had in this month. Opelka, Garin wins twice. Who are the other players to win titles? I can't think of it at this moment. Monfils did it, so I suppose that's not
he has two.
Great, but yeah, so Monfils has 2. The point being, you know, Garin has 2 as well. Nishioka's making the final. My larger point, FAA has made 2 finals. Here's my larger point. I've thought all week, and, you know, this has been a theme we've harped on throughout Cracked Racquet's existence, really, is we keep waiting for that generational shift to happen. At the top level, obviously, the stranglehold of the big 3, big 4 on the Grand Slams. Still, that fever hasn't been broken. It's still all Nadal, all Djokovic, all Federer, all the time, taking home those titles. But on a week-by-week level, at the 250 level, at the 500 level, we saw Medvedev do it in Cincinnati. We saw, I think it was Zverev and Medvedev in Shanghai at the end of last year as well. Dominic Thiem, Stefanos Tsitsipas at the ATP year-end finals. I think the generational shift is happening before our eyes, Jamie. I think we are finally seeing, and it's a credit to those top guys, you know, Djokovic, Nadal, Federer, they're not going to be playing every week anymore. And that was never in the plans for them once entering the 2020 season, I'm sure. But week in, week out, gone are the Chiliches and the Burdiches and even the Goffins and Raoniches to an extent. And it feels like all of the guys we're seeing are in that 25 and under range. Now, I guess this qualifies as a good take, bad take, or hot take, Jamie. I think on the ATP side, because we're already there on the WTA side, Kenin, Osaka, Andreescu are slam champions. That generational shift has happened. But I think it is finally full-fledged, locked in to start this 2020 season. Generational shift is on. Good take, bad take, hot take.
I think it's a bad take right now, just because you can't equate it to the WTA side. The WTA side, of course, you talk about that generational shift obviously happening, and what's the first thing you cite? It's those major titles. Since we haven't seen that sort of breakthrough, look, I think, especially on the men's side, it's got to happen here first. So you talk about the week-by-week basis. Yes, I agree with you. Maybe not some of the names of like Raonic and Goffin, because those guys honestly are still phenomenal and can be threats in these. But you're right. We're seeing a lot of young names get deep into these tournaments. Realistically, though, it can't just be at the 250s and 500s, right? Now, that's where it's got to start. We got to see that. And then more of the young guys break into the Masters category, sure. And then we build up all the way against the big guns in the majors. And I get that. So maybe, perhaps, we're starting to see it. But in terms of calling this the generational shift, I don't know. Maybe at the start of it, but I don't know. Bad take to say, like, this is it, just because we haven't seen. I mean, Djokovic is still dominant when it comes to the top. Nadal, still dominant when it comes to the top, particularly Roland Garros. Fed, obviously, in and out with injuries. But those guys still reign supreme.
So can I give you my counter? Because obviously I'm going to. There have been 13 non-ATP Cup, ATP 250 or higher level events thus far in the 2020 season. 9 of them have been won by guys 25 or under. Andre Rublev's won 2. Umber's won 1. Garin's won 2. Yuri Vesely, I may have counted incorrectly, but he's won 1. That's 6. Kyle Edmonds won another. That's 7. Casper Ruud is 8. Riley Opelka, 9. Ooh, I miscounted. Tsitsipas, 10. So 10 of those first 13 titles, Jamie, are coming from guys under the age of 25. Now, it's entirely like you mentioned. You're not going to see Nadal, Djokovic, or Federer at... You may see them at an ATP 500. Tokyo last year for Djokovic pops to mind when he was chasing that year-end world number 1. But you're certainly not going to see them at the 250 level. And if you do, there should be an investigation launched right away into how that tournament managed to pay the $3 million to get Rafa Nadal all the way to Marseille, France in a random week in February, because how that money got there, it would be crazy. But... I don't know how you deny that. Like, I know you're not denying it. I apologize. I didn't mean to frame it as in you're saying I'm completely off. But that means something. I mean, they're not winning each and every week.
They're also not playing. Nadal, Djokovic, and Fed haven't played a tournament since the Australian Open. So to me, that doesn't really count.
But tennis exists outside of the slams, and I know I don't have to tell you that. But I'm saying for the non-8 slam weeks of the season. The generational shift, I guess, is what I'm saying, is on. It's fully fledged on the ATP side now.
Maybe when you're talking about comparing like an FAA and then like a Gasquet on his way out, I'll give you that. But in terms of taking out that top level, it's just simply not there yet. And yes, these titles are great to see for the guys under 25, for those young guns, but they're not going up against, they're not going up against Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer because they haven't played a tournament since the Australian. So I don't know how you can say that.
So let's end then with this framing. Stan Wawrinka and Stefanos Tsitsipas play at Indian Wells. Just, their draw, let's say it's a quarterfinal match, whatever. Who do you favor heading into that one?
Tsitsipas, but there's a lot of other factors there. I mean, Wawrinka, also another guy we haven't seen play a match since the Australian. So
okay, Monfils and Tsitsipas right now.
I mean, Tsitsipas, he's ranked way higher, right?
So that's what I'm saying.
There are certain guys, yes. But once again, that doesn't apply to
that
top rank. But who does it matter? I mean, Zverev has been at the top of the game for a few years now.
Right now, more likely to beat. Novak Djokovic. No, I'm sorry for ignoring you. You're right. But right now, more likely to beat Novak Djokovic. Hubie Hurkacz. Or I'm trying to think who's like 30 years old, or like, I don't know, Jan Lennard Struff.
You really want to go with that? Struff took the only set off him in the Australian. I'm not sure that's the best.
I don't know. I don't know if it was the only stretch, but
look,
I'm just saying
by that logic, you know, you would have said the generational shift happened 3 years ago with Zverev. But we're not. We didn't say that.
No,
you know, so
because it's not just Alex Zverev, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. It's all of them. It's the Casper Ruuds of the world. It's the Christian Garins of the world. They're winning titles. I guess. Look, this is a hill I'll die on forever. But yeah, it would be nice to see them beat the guys at the majors. But they're beating everyone else everywhere else, and that is what I've noticed.
Here's the problem, and here's why I got to draw the line somewhere. Is because technically, at any point, you could say the generational shift is starting. And at some point, that take is right. It just matters how long of time you're measuring, right?
Okay.
you could go back to 2017 and say, oh, yeah, it's starting. Look, it's Zverev. It was just happened to be a six-year process. And then by that time, you've weeded out those people. You could also say it starts now. You know what I mean? So, like, looking back, you're going to be able to say, oh, you know, it started here,
yeah,
it started here.
But I'm not saying it started. I'm saying it happened.
You're saying it's here.
I'm saying the foreground, whatever, the table was set by Zverev a few years ago and by Tsitsipas and Medvedev a couple of years after that and on and on and on, whatever. But now everyone's at the table and everyone's eating. And if you're a next-gen guy, you know, the Ugo Umberts of the world, the Miomir Kecmanovic's, you're not afraid of no one. You know, now is your time. And it just feels like these guys, we're seeing it. They're playing with the confidence. They're like, yeah, I can play. You know, Diego Schwartzman doesn't scare me. You know, oh, I
Ben yeah,
Ma
I mean,
pair,
if you take,
please.
If you take the three best players out of this conversation, yeah, I think that's fair. The problem is they are the conversation when it comes to really the top of our game, so that's not really fair to do so, right? I mean, just look at the rankings simply in a list, and you can see that it pops out, you know? You see the young guys who are rising, where they're multiple in the top 10 now. Look, I mean, we've seen this. Zverev, Berrettini, Tsitsipas, Medvedev, even Thiem, who's a little bit older, but pushing up and has been relevant for so long up there. Of course, that's the case in terms of generational shift. People are coming in that are younger. The problem is they still haven't knocked out those 1, 2, and 3. And until that happens, I'm not going to go and tell you that's a good take.
All right. That's fair. I think we can leave that argument. I mean, that's a discussion we've had literally for the past 3 years.
We will continue to have it until they all retire.
No, we'll continue to have it until it's like, is the Carlos Alcaraz generation surpassing, you know, the Lucas Puig of the world already? That'll be the next generational shift. Because
generational
I think
shifts,
years.
they're always fun to talk about. It's this one just happens to be special in the sense that these guys have held on for so long.
Yeah, absolutely true, and it's why for so long guys like you and I, Jamie, were locked in to the Challenger circuit, which is the last result. I just want to mention real quick, Max Cressy knocking out former Texas A&M, I believe All-American Arthur Rinderneck in the final there. For Rinderneck, he had gone from not making it past the quarterfinal of a Challenger to going winner circle and final these past 2 weeks. For Cressy, that he has last year's Cleveland title off the books, comes back the week after, because I think he lost round of 16 in Cleveland this year, wins in Drummondville, another indoor hardcore challenger. You know, he didn't get broken served on serve the entire week, I think, for the 6-6, 6-7 serve and volley or return and volley. If you haven't seen him play, it's really fun to watch because it's so different than everyone else. But it's a really fun time to be a tennis fan because there are so many young players biting at the heels of these established veterans. It does feel like, you know, on both the ATP and WTA tours right now, you could get a different winner at a different tournament every different week and not be surprised. And they're going to have the chance to do just that again this week. 5 really fun events across the board. On the women's side, you've got, of course, the event in Acapulco, as well as the event they've got going on right now in Doha as well. You talk about the top seeds there in Doha. Ashley Barty, the number one seed. Sabalenka, the 2, I believe. Bencic, the 4. Bertens, the 7. You've got Sofia Kenin in action. Svitolina, Petra Kvitova. All of your great players are playing in Doha. And, of course, in Acapulco, they're not going to leave you shy as well. Players like Sloane Stephens in the draw as well, although I think she's unseeded. I think we might have actually had a couple of seeds pull out in Acapulco. Nevertheless, it's going to be a really fun event there. And then on the men's side, you know, they've got the action in Dubai as well, where we're going to see Novak Djokovic playing for the first time in Australia. He's the one seed there. Gael Monfils, the 3-seed Fognini, the 4-seed Tsitsipas, the 2. Really fun floating first-round matchup between two guys in Hubie Hurkacz and Alexander Sasha Bublik that are going to light it up. I guess Hurkacz, Jamie, is, you know, he's Stone Cold Steve Austin. You're not going to see any – well, he's Stone Cold Steve Austin was very emotional, but you're not going to see any emotion out of Hubie Hurkacz. Bublik could break 3 rackets before the end of the first game. So that's a really fun contrast there. And, of course, guys like Rublev, Benoit Paire, Marin Cilic floating throughout, that Karen Khachanov throwing throughout the draw as well. Acapulco, I mentioned Djokovic is in action in Dubai in Acapulco. It's Rafa Nadal in action. He's going to play Pablo Andujar first. Really fun first-round matches there. Dimonau are going to play Miomir Kecmanovic. Opelka rematch from Delray Beach as he's going to play Sunwoo Kwon. There's a Wawrinka-Tiafoe matchup. I'm all in on Nikirios Ugo Umber. That should be a ton of fun as well. Of course, the top seed is Nadal, but then 2-seed Alex Zverev, 4-seed FAA, and the number 3-seed Stan Wawrinka. Number 6-seed Nick Kyrgios, as I mentioned, who's the defending champion there. And then on the dirt in Chile, number 1-seed Christian Garin, number 2-seed Casper Ruud. Both of those guys have won titles thus far on the dirt on the ATP Tour. So really fun sequence of events, Jamie. I don't know if you can – probably the spot to be is Acapulco, right, because they've got both the men and the women there.
Yep, I think that's the place to be. There's going to be a lot of fun streaming on my end throughout the week, particularly for the action in Mexico. I mean, look, you look everywhere throughout that draw, and there are just dangerous players lurking, both the men's and the women's side. There are matchups that, you know, as you might say, they're juicy. So they're going to be a lot of fun to watch. And yeah, I'm very excited for the action.
And of course, if you miss any of the action, be sure to check in on our Mini Break podcast all week long, where we will be keeping you up to date on those biggest storylines, results, and controversies from the tennis world. Again, thank you to all of our friends who took the time to leave, you know, reviews and leave little messages for us to try and win John Isner, Steve Johnson gear. Now, we don't have any more gear to give out for you, but we will still greatly appreciate those of you who do take the time to like, rate, subscribe, review this podcast, the Cracked Interviews podcast, and the Great Shot podcast as well. We should have a bunch of content on all three of our podcast streams throughout the week, so be on the lookout for that. And of course, if you've missed anything, be sure to go check out our website, crackedrackets.com, on the more immediate front, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, for your more immediate updates throughout the day. Jamie, any final thoughts before we wrap this bad boy?
I think you got it all.
Yeah,
thorough as always, Gruskin.
Yeah, so well, I did not get the shout out to our super producers Max Slinger and Daniel Westhoff, who, as we learned with our technical difficulties tonight on the live GSP, they have a fucking job to do as always. So shout out to those guys. But with that in mind, for my wonderful co-host James Foster McDonald, our super producers Max Slinger and Daniel Westhoff, our sponsors at both Aerobar and Diadem, the respective promo codes for Aerobar Cracked 30, Diadem CR50 to get money off your orders there, and from all of us here at both Cracked and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. Jamie, what do we tell the people?
That's a break.
That's a break, and we will see you all tomorrow. Thanks, everyone.